Bring a little optimism into your life with The Bright Side, a new kind of daily podcast from Hello Sunshine, hosted by me, Danielle Robay.
And me, Simone Boyce. Every weekday, we're bringing you conversations about culture, the latest trends, inspiration, and so much more.
I am so excited about this podcast, The Bright Side. You guys are giving people a chance to shine a light on their lives, shine a light on a little advice that they want to share.
Listen to The Bright Side on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search The Bright Side.
Hello, from Wonder Media Network, I'm Jenny Kaplan, host of Womanica, a daily podcast that introduces you to the fascinating lives of women history has forgotten. We've always been intrigued by stories of disappearances, whether it's a fraudster from the 17th century who kept evading the authorities or a novelist who taunted the Nazis and faked her own death. We all want to know, what happened next? To find out, listen to Womanica on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Danielle Moody here, host of the Woke AF Daily podcast. We've been with iHeart for a year, and what a year it has been. As we head deeper into 2024 and yet another life-changing election cycle, Woke AF Daily is here to keep you sane and woke. Make Woke AF Daily your podcast destination for 2024 election news and analysis. Listen to Woke AF Daily Season 5 on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Zone Media.
I think we should drop the book club chanting because it's a sort of funny bit, but it only goes so far.
What's your plans to replace the chanting?
I think you should start by chanting, and then I'll chastise you for how that doesn't work and why are you doing that.
I'm against chanting in general just because I find it kind of obtuse and conformist and a whole bunch of other bullshit reasons, mostly because I don't like talking loudly, which is the real reason that I don't like chanting. It just makes me uncomfortable.
Okay, well, let's do it the opposite. I will start chanting and you will refuse to join in and then chastise me. How's that sound?
Or we could have already started it with my rant about why I don't like chanting.
Well, then I guess you're listening to Cool Zone Media Book Club.
Book Club.
The podcast in which Gare and Margaret discuss how to start podcasts. Hardcasts?
Hardcast.
Hardner cast. That's my new country western cast. Cool Zone Media Book Club is a weekly book club where I read you stories. And in this case, you will be played by Gare. Hi, Gare.
Hi. Hello, audience surrogate.
Okay, so half the book club is like new, cool, exciting stories. And then the other half is that I'm like, I want you all to know some classics of science fiction and where everything comes from. And this is one of those episodes. This episode, you all probably guessed because the name and the title, Arthur C. Clarke, is a name you all might have heard of. Like, Gare, have you heard of Arthur C. Clarke?
I have heard of Arthur C. Clarke.
Yeah, that's enough. He's one of those people where if you dig in too much, you start being like, do I actually want to read this guy?
Well, I mean, isn't that like all like male authors, more or less?
Yeah, like don't type in Arthur C. Clarke controversy into Google.
Okay, I will not do that.
There's some allegations. Anyway, he is one of the classic science fiction writers. He's from England. He wrote the screenplay for 1968's 2001 Space Odyssey.
Oh, this guy. Okay.
Yeah.
All of the bad stuff in 2001 comes from him and all the cool stuff comes from Kubrick.
Oh, interesting.
Based on my diving into the development of that story. But that's just my personal opinion. That's up to interpretation. Many people disagree with me.
Well, I love 2001. I need to rewatch it. The idea that in space there are things that just don't conform with our idea of reality that will like break our brains. Is that a him or is that a Kubrick?
That's mostly Kubrick because him and Kubrick worked together to write the screenplay. And then Arthur C. Clarke wrote the book based on the screenplay from him and Kubrick. So it wasn't actually his original idea. Most people have that reversed. Okay. People think that the movie's an adaptation of Arthur C. Clarke's book, but it's not. The book itself is an adaptation of a story that mostly came from Kubrick.
Okay.
So a lot of like the more like Nietzschean or like existential stuff in 2001 mostly comes from Kubrick.
Okay.
And if you read any of the sequels to 2001, you can very clearly see what type of stuff came from Arthur C. Clarke. It's just an interesting experiment.
So that's really interesting to me because of the story that we're about to read.
I'm excited to hear it.
So I first ran across this story when I was probably a young teen. There's this book called The Science Fiction Hall of Fame, Volume 1. And it was put together by the Science Fiction Writers of America, the SFWA, which is kind of the closest thing that we have to a union as speculative fiction writers in the U.S. I was about to say I'm a member of SFWA, but I don't know if I'm up on my... I don't know if I renewed my membership. I believe in the SFWA and have been a member in the past and will probably be a member now that I've shamed myself into remembering to send in my, you know, yearly fee or whatever. But they're the group...
That's me and the IWW.
Yeah, exactly. They're the group that is primarily the reason that speculative fiction, short fiction, is actually something that you can make a little bit of money at compared to other things, other types of writing.
That's cool.
Because they declare what counts as pro rates, and they raise it all the time to match inflation. And so outside of speculative fiction, you have all these places paying like 1 cent a word, you know? And then within science fiction or speculative fiction more broadly, most magazines want to be professional magazines, and so they therefore have to pay the current professional rate, which I don't remember what is because I haven't submitted short fiction to magazines in a while. My little brag about how they come to me. No, I've just been busy writing other stuff.
Yeah, you're busy writing a lot of novellas, from my understanding.
A lot of novellas, and now a book, but I'll plug that at the end. So I found this book on my dad's shelf, and I read it. And there's two stories I remember from it. And the other one was a man invents a machine to be able to hear in the frequencies that plants communicate. And then he like cuts a tree and then can never live with himself again and realizes that like everything alive can feel pain. And he just suffers. He just absolutely suffers with that realization. Oh, there's a couple other stories from there. There's another one where a guy invents a thing where he doesn't have to sleep and then he... A lot of stuff that Futurama has ripped off of comes from this book.
That makes sense.
But this story in particular stuck with me as a kid. And it's called The 9 Billion Names of God. And it's about the 9 billion names of God. And I'm going to read it. This story was originally published in 1953 or 1954. So for understanding of when they're talking about computers, that's what they're talking about. This story absolutely plays with Orientalist tropes and not in a self-conscious way. I want to point that out, and I will chalk that up to the style at the time, but you don't need to.
Well, you can also very easily blame the Theosophists, as you can for many, many things, for introducing this style of like Tibetan Orientalism. Just blame the Theosophists. It's easy, it's free, it's cheap, it's fun. Just blame them. They can take the heat. They've taken the heat for decades. It's fine.
Okay. So, with that disclaimer, The 9 Billion Names of God by Arthur C. Clarke. This is a slightly unusual request, said Dr. Wagner, with what he had hoped was commendable restraint. As far as I know, it's the first time anyone's been asked to supply a Tibetan monastery with an automatic sequence computer. I don't wish to be inquisitive, but I should hardly have thought that your, establishment had much use for such a machine. Could you explain just what you intend to do with it? Gladly, replied the Lama, readjusting his silk robes and carefully putting away the slide rule he had been using for currency conversions. Your Mark V computer can carry out any routine mathematical operation involving up to 10 digits. However, for our work, we are interested in letters, not numbers. As we wish you to modify the output circuits, the machine will be printing words, not columns of figures. I don't quite understand. This is a project on which we have been working for the last 3 centuries, since the Lamasery was founded, in fact. It is somewhat alien to your way of thought, so I hope you will listen with an open mind while I explain it. Naturally. Well, in order to run this podcast, we need to interject classic and important stories with advertisements for ads and services, said Margaret, the host. Here's some ads.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever.
I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Danielle Moody here, host of the Woke AF Daily podcast. We've been with iHeart's Outspoken Network for a year, and what a year it has been. Every weekday, I navigate our rapidly changing world alongside our series of fabulous expert guests. As we head deeper into 2024 and yet another life-changing election cycle, Woke AF Daily is here to keep you sane and woke. Woke not just to the latest headlines, but also to the collective power we all have. Woke to the need to build community with those around us. Woke to how to avoid burnout, and woke to the ways we can all find joy in the madness. Make Woke AF Daily with Danielle Moody your podcast destination for 2024 election news and analysis. And tune in to hear the ways I am working to stay grounded amidst it all. Listen to Woke AF Daily Season 5 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What up? I am Dramos, host of the Life as a Gringo podcast. Now, this is a show for the No Sabo kids, the 200%ers. Here we celebrate your otherness and embrace living in the gray area. If you ever felt like you were always too much this while also never being enough that, this is the podcast for you. Every Tuesday, I'll be bringing you conversations around personal growth, issues affecting the Latin community, and much more via my own personal stories, along with interviews with inspiring thought leaders from our community. Then, every Thursday, I'll be tackling trending stories and current events from our community that you need to know. So much of what makes our community so beautiful is our diversity, yet too often those of us who don't fit into this dumb stereotypical box of whatever it means to be Latino are left without a voice or just forgotten about. On this show, I celebrate the uniqueness of our culture and invite you to walk in your authenticity. Listen to Life as a Gringo as a part of the My Cultura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And we're back. It is really quite simple. We have been compiling a list which shall contain all the possible names of God. I beg your pardon? We have reason to believe, continued the Lama imperturbably, that's totally how you pronounce that, that all such names can be written with not more than 9 letters in an alphabet we have devised. And you have been doing this for 3 centuries? Yes, we expected it would take us about 15,000 years to complete the task. Oh, Dr. Wagner looked a little dazed. Now I see why you wanted to hire one of our machines. But exactly what is the purpose of this project? The Lama hesitated for a fraction of a second, and Wagner wondered if he had offended him. If so, there was no trace of annoyance in the reply. Call it ritual, if you like, but it's a fundamental part of our belief. All the many names of the Supreme Being, God, Jehovah, Allah, and so on, are only man-made labels. There is a philosophical problem of some difficulty here, which I do not propose to discuss, but somewhere among all the possible combinations of letters that can occur are what one may call the real names of God. By systematic permutation of letters, we have been trying to list them all. I see. So you've been starting at A-A-A-A-A-A and working to Z-Z-Z-Z-Z-Z-Z. Exactly, though we use a special alphabet of our own. Modifying the electromatic typewriters to deal with this is, of course, trivial. A rather more interesting problem is that of devising suitable circuits to eliminate ridiculous combinations. For example, no letter must occur more than 3 times in succession. 3? Surely you mean 2. 3 is correct. I'm afraid it would take too long to explain why, even if you understood our language. I'm sure it would, said Wagner hastily. Go on. Luckily, it will be a simple matter to adapt your automatic sequence computer for this work. Since once it has been programmed properly, it will permute each letter in turn and print the result. What would have taken us 15,000 years, it will be able to do in 100 days. Dr. Wagner was scarcely conscious of the faint sounds from the Manhattan streets far below. He was in a different world, a world of natural, not man-made mountains. High up in the remote areas, these monks had been patiently at work, generation after generation, compiling their lists of meaningless words. Was there any limits to the follies of mankind? Still, he must give no hint to his inner thoughts. The customer was always right. "There's no doubt," replied the doctor, "that we can modify the Mark V to print lists of this nature. I'm much more worried about the problem of installation and maintenance. Getting out to Tibet in these days is not going to be easy." "We can arrange that. The components are small enough to travel by air. That is one reason why we chose your machine. If you can get them to India, we will provide transport from there." "And you want to hire two of our engineers?" "Yes, for the 3 months that the project should occupy." "I've no doubt that personnel can manage that." Dr. Wagner scribbled a note on his desk pad. "There are just two other points." Before he could finish the sentence, the Lama had produced a small slip of paper. "This is my certified credit balance at the Asiatic Bank." "Thank you. It appears to be adequate. The second matter is so trivial that I hesitate to mention it, but it's surprising how often the obvious gets overlooked. What source of electrical energy have you? "A diesel generator providing 50 kilowatts at 110 volts. It was installed about 5 years ago and is quite reliable. It's made life at the Lamasery much more comfortable, but of course, it was really installed to provide power for the motors driving the prayer wheels." "Of course," echoed Dr. Wagner. "I should have thought of that." The view from the parapet was vertiginous, but in time, one gets used to anything. After 3 months, George Hanley was not impressed by the 2,000-foot swoop into the abyss or the remote checkerboard of fields in the valley below. He was leaning against the wind-smooth stones and staring morosely at the distant mountains whose names he had never bothered to discover. This, thought George, was the craziest thing that had ever happened to him. Project Shangri-La, some wit back at the labs had christened it. For weeks now, the Mark V had been churning out acres of sheets covered with gibberish. Patiently, inexorably, the computer had been rearranging letters in all their possible combinations, exhausting each class before going on to the next. As the sheets had emerged from the electromagnetic typewriters, the monks had carefully cut them up and pasted them into enormous books. In another week, heaven be praised, they would have finished. Just what obscure calculations had convinced the monks that they needn't bother to go on to words of 10, 20, or 100 letters, George didn't know. One of his recurring nightmares was that there would be some change of plan and that the High Lama, whom they naturally called Sam Jaffe, although he didn't look a bit like him. Reader's note, I had to look that up. That's an actor who people would have recognized in the 50s. Would suddenly announce that the project would be extended to approximately AD 2060. They were quite capable of it. George heard the heavy wooden door slam in the wind as Chuck came out onto the parapet beside him. As usual, Chuck was smoking one of the cigars that made him so popular with the monks, who, it seemed, were quite willing to embrace all the minor and most of the major pleasures of life. That was one thing in their favor. They might be crazy, but they weren't blue noses. Those frequent trips they took down to the village, for instance. "Listen, George," said Chuck urgently. "I've learned something that means trouble." "What's wrong? Isn't the machine behaving?" That was the worst contingency George could imagine. It might delay his return, and nothing could be more horrible. The way he felt now, even the sight of a TV commercial would seem like manna from heaven. At least it would be some link with home. And who would I be to not take that opportunity to offer you this, the modern version of the TV commercial, the podcast commercial?
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Danielle Moody here, host of the Woke AF Daily podcast. We've been with iHeart's Outspoken Network for a year, and what a year it has been. Every weekday, I navigate our rapidly changing world alongside our series of fabulous expert guests. As we head deeper into 2024 and yet another life-changing election cycle, Woke AF Daily is here to keep you sane and woke. Woke not just to the latest headlines, but also to the collective power we all have. Woke to the need to build community with those around us. Woke to how to avoid burnout, and woke to the ways we can all find joy in the madness. Make Woke AF Daily with Danielle Moody your podcast destination for 2024 election news and analysis. And tune in to hear the ways I am working to stay grounded amidst it all. Listen to Woke AF Daily Season 5 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and I'm back for another season of my podcast, Climbing in Heels. You might know me from The Rachel Zoe Project or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as fully obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. My podcast, Climbing in Heels, is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season, we're taking things up a notch. I'll be talking to some incredible women across so many industries, from models and beauty industry stars to doctors, entrepreneurs, and TV personalities. Climbing in Heels is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Every week, listeners will be able to ask me any questions. I'm answering it all. My life is absolutely crazy with so much going on, and I'm so beyond excited to bring you along for the ride. Whether we're talking red carpet looks, current trends, or products I'm obsessed with, I'm here to be your fashion fairy godmother. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And we're back. No, it's nothing like that. Chuck settled himself on the parapet, which was unusual because normally he was scared of the drop. I've just found what all this is about. What do you mean? I thought we knew. Sure, we know what the monks are trying to do, but we didn't know why. It's the craziest thing. Tell me something new, growled George. But old Sam's come clean with me. You know the way he drops in every afternoon just to watch the sheet rolls out? Well, this time, he seemed rather excited, or at least as near as he'll ever get to it. When I told him that we were on the last cycle, he asked me, in that cute English accent of his, if I'd ever wondered what they were trying to do. I said, sure. And he told me. Go on, I'll buy it. Well, they believe that when they've listed all his names, and they reckon there are about 9 billion of them, God's purpose will be achieved. The human race will have finished what it was created to do, and there won't be any point in carrying on. Indeed, the very idea is something like blasphemy. Then what do they expect us to do? Commit suicide? There's no need for that. When the list's completed, God steps in and simply winds things up. Bingo. Oh, I get it. When we finish our job, it'll be the end of the world. Chuck gave a nervous little laugh. That's just what I said to Sam. And do you know what happened? He looked at me in a very queer way, like I'd been stupid in class, and said, "It's nothing as trivial as that." George thought this over for a moment. "That's what I call taking the wide view," he said presently. "But what do you suppose we should do about it? I don't see it makes the slightest difference to us. After all, we already knew they were crazy." "Yes, but don't you see what may happen? When the list's complete and the last trump doesn't blow, or whatever it is they expect, we may get the blame. It's our machine they've been using. I don't like the situation one little bit." "I see," said George slowly. "You've got a point there. But this sort of thing's happened before, you know. When I was a kid down in Louisiana, we had a crackpot preacher who once said the world was going to end next Sunday. Hundreds of people believed him, even sold their homes. Yet when nothing happened, they didn't turn nasty as you'd expect. They just decided that he'd made a mistake in his calculations and went right on believing. I guess some of them still do." "Well, this isn't Louisiana, in case you hadn't noticed. There are just two of us and hundreds of these monks. I like them, and I'll be sorry for old Sam when his life work backfires on him. But all the same, I wish I was somewhere else. I've been wishing that for weeks, but there's nothing we can do until the contract's finished and the transport arrives to fly us out." "Of course," said Chuck thoughtfully. "We could always try a bit of sabotage." "Like hell we could. That would make things worse." "Not the way I meant. Look at it like this. The machine will finish its run 4 days from now. on the present 24 hours a day basis. The transport calls in a week. Okay, then all we need to do is find something that needs replacing during one of the overhaul periods, something that'll hold up the work for a couple of days. We'll fix it, of course, but not too quickly. If we time matters properly, we can be down at the airfield when the last name pops out of the register. They won't be able to catch us then. I don't like it, said George. It would be the first time I ever walked out on a job. Besides, it would make them suspicious. No, I'll sit tight and see what comes. I still don't like it, he said 7 days later, as the tough little mountain ponies carried them down the winding road. And don't you think I'm running away because I'm afraid. I'm just sorry for those poor old guys up there, and I don't want to be around when they find out what suckers they've been. Wonder how Sam will take it. It's funny, replied Chuck, but when I said goodbye, I got the idea that he knew we were walking out on him, and that he didn't care because he knew the machine was running smoothly and that the job would soon be finished. After that, well, of course, for him, there just isn't any after that. George turned in his saddle and stared back up the mountain road. This was the last place from which one could get a clear view of the Lamasery. The squat, angular buildings were silhouetted against the afterglow of the sunset. Here and there, lights gleamed like portholes in the side of an ocean liner. Electric lights, of course, sharing the same circuit as the Mark V. How much longer would they share it, wondered George. Would the monks smash up the computer in their rage and disappointment? Or would they just sit down quietly and begin their calculations all over again? He knew exactly what was happening up on the mountain at this very moment. The High Lama and his assistants would be sitting in their silk robes inspecting the sheets as the junior monks carried them away from the typewriters and pasted them into their great volumes. No one would be saying anything. The only sound would be the incessant patter, the never-ending rainstorm of the keys hitting the paper, for the Mark V itself was utterly silent as it flashed through its thousands of calculations a second. 3 months of this, thought George, was enough to start anyone climbing up the wall. There she is, called Chuck, pointing down into the valley. Ain't she beautiful? She certainly was, thought George. The battered old DC-3 lay at the end of the runway like a tiny silver cross. In 2 hours, she would be bearing them away to freedom and sanity. It was a thought worth savoring like a fine liqueur. George let it roll around in his mind as the pony trudged patiently down the slope. The swift night of the high Himalayas was now almost upon them. Fortunately, the road was very good, as roads went in that region, and they were both carrying torches. There was not the slightest danger, only a certain discomfort from the bitter cold. The sky overhead was perfectly clear and ablaze with familiar, friendly stars. At least there would be no risk, thought George, of the pilot being unable to take off because of weather conditions. That had been his only remaining worry. He began to sing, but gave it up after a while. This vast arena of mountains, gleaming like whitely hooded ghosts on every side, did not encourage such ebullience. Presently, George glanced at his watch. Should be there in an hour, he called back over his shoulder to Chuck. Then he added, in an afterthought, wonder if the computer's finished its run. It was due about now. Chuck didn't reply, so George swung round in his saddle. He could just see Chuck's face, a white oval, turned toward the sky. Look, whispered Chuck, and George lifted his eyes to heaven. There is always a last time for everything. Overhead, without any fuss, the stars were going out. That's the story. Apparently, at some point, the Dalai Lama wrote Arthur C. Clarke and said, I read your story and found it very amusing. So,
that's fun.
Yeah, it got a pass from the people it was weirdly appropriating, I guess.
Yeah, I feel like that's all pretty self-contained.
It's overall self-contained, but I have a few thoughts about it. One that I didn't get until this last reading. It's really funny to me that the last trump is used instead of the last trumpet, like as the way of signaling the end of the world. And apparently that would be a way that you would have said that in the 50s. And I just find that very amusing based on the current state of the political world or whatever.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
The actual thing that I've been thinking about, the reason that I wanted to do this episode is that I just did a piece on Cool People Did Cool Stuff about Ada Lovelace and, you know, early software and mechanical computers and things like that, right?
Yeah.
And she talked very explicitly about how computers are not capable and would never be capable of creating things, but instead like responding to the inputs and things like that. It's gone on to be like, I don't have it in front of me, but like Ada's objection or something was coined by the gay British man who defeated the Nazis, the computer guy who invented computing. That guy.
Yeah, the guy that was killed for being gay, essentially.
Yeah, he was like chemically castrated. It didn't go well for him.
The Enigma machine guy.
Yeah, that guy that we know everything about except the name of, because we're professionals.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So half of the listeners, at least, are now shouting this man's name in frustration at us.
You know what the cool thing is, though, is that this is a podcast and I cannot hear them.
Yeah, it's true.
I won't hear however many people is yelling his name at me at the moment.
Yeah, so that man, who we're going to call George, he wrote Ada's Objection, and it was about how computers do with it what you have them do, you know, rather than being like themselves a creative force. Okay, so this is the wing nuttiest thing. This is why I wanted you to be the guest for this. I've been thinking a lot about how AI is like running through all possibilities of creative things.
Yeah.
Like systematically rather than like creatively. It's just like, what if all possible images are made? And so it's kind of like, I think, I don't know if I really think this, but I've been thinking about it. It's like running us towards the death of culture, because everything will have been like, there's sort of an infinite possibility of combinations of words. Like there's an infinite creative output that could be made. But AI is like trying to run through them as fast as possible. And we've been kind of, even before AI, kind of doing that as like culture speeds up. I don't know where I'm going with that, but I just wanted to run that past you as relates to this story.
Yeah, now that I've heard the story, I can also see the large number of influences it's had throughout culture, like using computers to like pinpoint God. It is also like weirdly like Lovecraftian story as well.
And yeah.
It's like initiating an apocalypse by like by coming up with all of the utterances of God.
Oh, you're totally right. And this is years after Lovecraft, so.
Yeah.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
I also just really like the turn of phrase, the stars are going out. It's like someone's like flicking off the lights. I find that to be fun.
It's one of the best lines in literature. Overhead, without any fuss, the stars were going out.
Yeah, very good.
And like how it changes on a dime, this like, you know, earlier I said that it was like not self-consciously orientalist. Your two computer programmers consider themselves clearly enlightened compared to these backwards people, even though all they want to do is get back to TV. And there's even kind of this thing. I have a feeling that the author didn't specifically intend this, but I like reading this kind of thing into it. The thing that is going to carry them away from this backwards place is a silver cross. They refer to the plane as a silver cross. And we assume we know better, but we don't.
Yeah, like the human's own hubris is kind of, I guess, a recurring trend in work kind of like this. And I always have the impulse to compare stuff like this to the other biggest case of Tibetan Orientalism in fantasy and science fiction, which would be Twin Peaks, where also I think one of the main cruxes is one of the main characters' own hubris and his inability to leave well enough alone.
So now you're going to destroy all of my goth cred.
No, Margaret, are you serious?
I have only seen like an episode of
Twin
Peaks.
Oh my God, no.
I have seen so many movies by that man.
Jesus fucking Christ.
And I have no idea why I haven't seen Twin Peaks. And now I have lost 30% of my friends.
I'm showing Twin Peaks currently to like five different people. I'm at so many different points in the series right now because I'm watching it with so many other people to give them the experience. I have half my apartment turned into a Twin Peaks set.
Oh, yeah. No, and I'm
oh
very...
Oh, my God.
It's been part of, like, the culture I've been in for a very long time.
Yeah,
I think that's
yeah.
what it is that I hit this point where I was like, I sat down to watch it once.
Point of no return. Yeah.
It didn't immediately catch me. But yeah, I hit the point of no return where I was, like, too embarrassed to admit it. So don't tell anyone, Gare. It's just between you and I.
Oh, I won't. This is a secret. Yeah.
I
will not spread this around. We don't want to damage your rep.
No, no.
We can keep this contained.
Yeah. Irreversible damage.
I would recommend giving it a watch.
I will.
It has a lot of good Tibetan stuff, a lot of good like existential stuff. not in terms of computers, but otherwise a lot of thematic similarities to this short story. And I would not be surprised if the co-writer, Mark Frost, was intimately familiar, because he pulls from a lot of science fiction mythological stuff. In fact, the ending of this story essentially happens at kind of multiple points in Twin Peaks. It's quite good. It's quite good.
I think I wouldn't have been ready for it when I first sat down to watch it.
Sure.
Because I needed my weirdness to be overtly gothic and weird. Like, it needed to be like...
Absolutely.
In a castle instead of like in the mundane world, which is the beauty of that guy, Twin Peaks guy.
Lynch.
Is that he creates that sense within the everyday, you know?
Yes, yes. And there's a few specific moments, especially in Fire Walk With Me and season three, that are like very like American Gothic, like extremely, very condensed. But the rest of it, there's actually an interesting juxtaposition between like American Gothic versus like Pacific Northwest New Weird, which are like two sister genres, but they're not always the same thing.
Yeah.
And Twin Peaks likes to kind of mix between the two. And for the original series, probably more often ends up being in like P&W New Weird, as opposed to some of the American Gothic sensibilities it kind of grows into. There's certainly some science fiction elements similar to kind of how this story kind of blends that sort of like Orientalism with science fiction elements.
Right.
Well, and actually, this also ties in a lot. If you're talking about Arthur C. Clarke in 2001, there's also a lot of carryover from 2001 into Twin Peaks as well. A lot of that does come from Kubrick, because Kubrick and Lynch were contemporaries. But some of that certainly would also stem from Arthur C. Clarke stuff. But yeah, the ending of season two is very similar in some ways to one part of the ending of 2001. There's a part that's very similar to the Stargate sequence. There's a decent amount of crossover. You can definitely read in some Arthur C. Clarke undertones across some of the more cosmic elements of Twin Peaks.
Well, that's what's so interesting about it, is overall, Arthur C. Clarke's reputation as a science fiction author...
He's like a scientific realist in a lot of cases.
Exactly.
Yeah.
He's specifically a scientific realist. And so this sort of mystical element, like people talk about this story as being like outside of his traditional wheelhouse.
Yeah.
So that was why, you know, at the beginning you were like, oh, Arthur C. Clarke wrote the sciencey boring bits of 2001.
Correct.
And Kubrick did the like, but what if it's like drugs in space part? And that's what makes this sort of interesting to me, is a kind of a gate into that. There is like a certain level where if you write about space and it's not fundamentally weird, you're doing it wrong.
Yeah, totally.
And like, it's kind of part of the betrayal of Star Wars and shit.
Absolutely.
I like Star Wars, but...
I mean, space is like, it's literally right on the outside. You have to incorporate a certain amount of outsideness into it, or else it won't feel correct. And I mean, that goes all the way back to Lovecraft, and you can like incorporate that into like the CCRU's cultural theorist stuff in terms of how they view science fiction. But no, it has to have an element of outsideness, and that's something I think this story gets to really well.
Yeah.
Especially, you have an almost like character of Arthur C. Clarke within the scientists being like, oh, they're going to be so mad when this mystical mumbo-jumbo computer stuff doesn't end up working. And then it still does. So there's that little fun part. And then it kind of introduces that element of outsideness, which otherwise I think the story would not be good at all. If it just ended with the thing not working, then it was like an examination of like the failures to use technology to like incorporate some kind of spiritual enlightenment. Like, that does not sound like a very interesting short story.
No, it would have not passed down through the generations to you listeners today.
No.
Yeah.
Well, and then continuing on to 2001 and then even Twin Peaks, like having that element of outsideness is what has made these things like cultural touchstones for so long. And the emphasis on not trying to explain everything with a scientific rationalization gives these things a sense of like immortal intrigue that keeps lingering on our mind for so long.
Well, it's like, I went and saw Totality last week, you know, same as a lot of people. And it's the second time I got to see it. And the first time I saw it, I was like, oh, I have now looked into the eye of God. I know what's happening. I know that the moon went in front of the sun, right? Like, but it doesn't make it not. I am now looking at the thing that controls all life on Earth that we can't look at. You know, if like, you were to just describe the sun being like, oh, there's this thing in the sky that you can't make eye contact with or you'll it'll fuck you up.
Yeah, it's God.
You know? Like, yeah.
Like, humans have known this is God for like a long time. Almost all of our gods are sun gods. Like, yeah. We're very aware.
Yeah. And so I went and saw a star go out. And, you know, obviously I knew it was going to come back.
It's
and like,
so freaky, though.
I really like the fact that knowing the science doesn't take away its power, its interest.
It's awe.
Yeah. Awe is the right word.
Quite literally. Like, it is like a divine awe.
Yeah.
No, it is great to watch when everything goes dark at 3 p.m. in the afternoon. And shadows start creating little cameras and your animals go crazy because they are confused for what's happening. It is like a very divine experience.
Anyway, that's going to do it for us here at Cool Zone Media Book Club. If you enjoyed this podcast on the Cool People Who Did Cool Stuff feed, you should check out the It Could Happen Here feed that Gare is a guest of. Gare, you just did a good, what is it, Project 70 million?
Agenda 47.
Agenda 47.
Which is the secondary highest number of synchronicity after 23. So watch out for that, folks.
And if you're listening to something that could happen here, you can check me out on Cool People Did Cool Stuff. I talk about history. And I also have a book that will be going into pre-order soon. It is my first novel. I've been, as mentioned earlier, I've written an awful lot of novellas, including very long novellas that, whatever, all categories are social categorization. I have decided that this is my first novel, and A Country of Ghosts is a long novella. And this book is called The Sapling Cage, and it comes out on September 24th from the Feminist Press. And you can check it out closer to then if you pre-order it. See y'all next week. Alan Turing!
What Could Happen Here is a production of Cool Zone Media. For more podcasts from Cool Zone Media, visit our website, coolzonemedia.com, or check us out on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts. You can find sources for It Could Happen Here updated monthly at coolzonemedia.com/sources. Thanks for listening.
Bring a little optimism into your life with The Bright Side, a new kind of daily podcast from Hello Sunshine, hosted by me, Danielle Robay,
and me, Simone Boyce. Every weekday, we're bringing you conversations about culture, the latest trends, inspiration, and so much more.
I am so excited about this podcast, The Bright Side. You guys are giving people a chance to shine a light on their lives, shine a light on a little advice that they want to share.
Listen to The Bright Side on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search The Bright Side.
Hello, from Wonder Media Network, I'm Jenny Kaplan, host of Womanica, a daily podcast that introduces you to the fascinating lives of women history has forgotten. We've always been intrigued by stories of disappearances. Whether it's a fraudster from the 17th century who kept evading the authorities, or a novelist who taunted the Nazis and faked her own death, we all want to know, what happened next? To find out, listen to Womanica on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Danielle Moody here, host of the Woke AF Daily podcast. We've been with iHeart for a year, and what a year it has been. As we head deeper into 2024 and yet another life-changing election cycle, Woke AF Daily is here to keep you sane and woke. Make Woke AF Daily your podcast destination for 2024 election news and analysis. Listen to Woke AF Daily Season 5 on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.